It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. Note to listeners, this next conversation involves the topic of suicide. UW-River Falls has completed what's called a postvention plan. It involves efforts to promote healing, limit suffering, and prevent additional suicides. Nearly a year ago, the campus community lost 4 students to suicide in just 2 months. According to MPR News, the postvention plan was finalized in August with help from the Jed Foundation. It's a national nonprofit specializing in suicide prevention. On the other side of the state in Fond du Lac County, a Wisconsin mother is working on prevention efforts every day since her son died by suicide in 2017. Sue Mitchell-Metz is executive coordinator of the National Alliance on Mental Health, or NAMI, in Fond du Lac County. Sue spoke with my co-host Kate Archer-Kent about working to reduce the stigma of suicide by talking openly about her personal experience.
Now that you're leading the Fond du Lac National Alliance on Mental Health, what prevention efforts are you working on in your community?
So we actually do a lot of work with different organizations, with the schools from third grade up to eighth and ninth grade. And we've been working with organizations who are wanting to increase mental health support for their staff members. So I've been asked to come and present there as well. And so we have programs designated for workplace mental health.
I want to ask you, Sue, how important is it for schools to have a prevention plan in place?
From research and what NAMI puts out there, it is very important. Suicide rates are even going up for children. And in fact, ages 10 to 24, suicide is the second leading cause of death. And so being able to reach them at a young age and normalizing the talk about mental health and how it is as important to take care of the brain as an organ as it is such as a heart. We're teaching kindergartners already about the heart and jump rope for heart. And so they're starting to get that concept of what organs within the body are. So we're trying to normalize that the brain is an organ and can get sick like any other organ within the body, and how that can lead to mental illness and what mental illness is and how it can be treated and cared for.
At UW-River Falls, they are nearing a year since losing 4 students to suicide, and they recently finished a postvention plan so that they can help limit suffering and prevent additional suicides. Can you speak to how important having this type of aftermath plan is in place?
Yes, definitely. Because in addition to those that are close to the family and individuals that may have died by suicide, it really does affect everybody that has had interaction with this person. And so often we just think of the family, but in fact, research shows that over 125 people are affected by one single suicide. Mm. And if you think about the youth, you know, it's all the classmates, it's the bus driver, it's the people they go to church with. If, you know, depending on the age, they might be working. So it's their coworkers. So supporting these individuals after death by suicide and helping them to normalize that talk and allowing them to talk about that is, you know, tremendously important, as well as the grief that comes along with that. Often, again, people think that grief can only be those who are really close to the student or the person who has passed. And that is, you know, not true. Grief can affect anybody and in different ways. So that also has to be addressed.
Sue, how do you take care of yourself in this challenging and this heartbreaking work?
Good question. So after my son, Ryan, died by suicide, it'll be 7 years in November. I myself thought I was doing well. And sometime later, I don't know, about 9, 10, 11 months in, it was suggested by my family doctor that I see a therapist. And it was at that time I was diagnosed with severe depression, severe anxiety, PTSD, along with complicated grief. And I worked with a therapist for a long time, went through specific types of therapy that helped me learn how to cope with the emotions that come with the thoughts of, you know, what had happened and things like that. And so during the therapy, I learned many different self-care exercises. So a lot of it for me is one, being out in nature. I learned I loved sun. I loved nature. I loved to hear the wind blow through trees. So being outside, I also learned that I need time just to be quiet and be able to sit with my feelings. So I'll just turn, you know, some of my favorite music on so it's quiet in the background, but not too quiet. And I just sit with my feelings and I let myself and give myself permission to have them feelings come out, whatever it is. Sometimes it's, you know, nothing really. And sometimes, you know, it's full blown. I still cry and shake and whatever, you know, when I have these moments.
This is deeply personal, but how do you handle anniversaries?
So we don't want to ever, like, I try not to focus per se on the death of my son. That was one moment in his entire life. So we actually try to focus more like on his birthday, and we celebrate his birthday, usually going to a restaurant of his daughter's choice, and bringing a picture with them and setting it on table, and he just enjoys lunch or supper with us. As far as the day of his death, I usually just try to prepare myself to have a plan and a backup plan. So my plan generally is that I'm going to do something that is special to remind me of my son. It may be, you know, doing his favorite activity or going to his favorite restaurant. But my backup plan is always, if I can't do it that day, that's okay. And I can just sit in my house and be good with that.
Why do you need a backup plan? Is it life is busy, or sometimes you don't even realize your own feelings and how they might be in that moment?
Exactly what you just said. So I don't know if I'm going to be up for actually celebrating that day. And I kind of put that in quotes, because yeah, you don't know how you're going to be feeling and what's going to take over that day. So if I plan it, then it reduces my anxiety if I can't go through with the original plan. So I have that backup plan to prevent anxiety.
You're really listening to yourself, really understanding what you're feeling and being able to pinpoint it and be aware of it. And you need to adjust in those moments.
Yeah. And that's what I found so important in my healing, is that I had to accept that my body is going to show me signs and I have to slow down and I have to take that break when my body says, you need to take a break. I didn't realize that prior to, you know, my son's death and going through the therapy that I had gone through. I'm a nurse by background. I thought I was doing all the right things, but I never realized how to take care of my mental health in that way.
Sue Mitchell-Metz is with us, executive coordinator of the National Alliance on Mental Health in Fond du Lac, and we're discussing how to reduce the stigma of suicide and talking openly about improving mental health support. Sue, you facilitate local support groups, including the Survivors of Suicide Loss Support Group. What can you tell us about these gatherings?
Yes. So after Ryan passed, I went through training to become a facilitator for Survivors of Suicide Loss Group, and because we did not have one close to us. And it took a little while to get it running and for people to participate, but I was not willing to give up because most every time we had at least one person show up. And, you know, it was my thought that if I can help one person, I made a difference and that's okay. However, today, 4.5 years later, from its inception, we have on average about a dozen people attend, and their loved ones that have passed, you know, some are their children, some are parents that have passed, significant others, siblings. So we're a mixture of all different relationships, but we all have the commonality that they all died by suicide, and they've all come together and they really could run it without a facilitator. They just come together, support each other. They share what they're struggling with. Each other, you know, gives them support, ask them if they tried different things to help with their struggling. It's almost like, you know, we're all kind of becoming professionals at the grief that suicide has left for all of us. And they have been so connected that they also created a Facebook Messenger page so that they can communicate outside of the group. And when they're having a bad day or struggling, they can just put it in there and they get words of encouragement every day.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. I wonder, have there been moments where you've learned from them?
Absolutely. I have learned so much from listening to other people and how their stories are similar, but their reactions and experiences are so different. And so I've taken a lot of that when I do provide like presentations in the public, and I'm able to share a, you know, wealth of information that comes from not only me, but many lived experience.
I want to ask you about proximity to care and proximity to support, because for people in rural areas who might not have a local support group, or it could be miles upon miles away, you know, you mentioned that the internet helps keep us connected, but what do you say for those who want to forge some relationships here and go to support groups, but there might not be one that is close to them?
I am glad you asked that, because NAMI does provide online support groups and programming. For Wisconsin, they can go to namiwisconsin.org and they can search for programs and support groups. And it doesn't matter where you live, you know, you could join any of the support groups and or go through the programming that is offered virtually.
The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline 988 or texting HOPELINE, what have you seen through that, and how coordinated is the national effort for people who are local, like, say, in Wisconsin?
I think being a national change and culture change and bringing it to state levels and community levels is really a challenge. But I think it's working with so many organizations, bringing it to the forefront. I actually was just at a event where I think there was probably 50 or so different organizations that came together to provide information to the public. And even many of those that were not specific to mental health shared information about 988, because they just want to get it out there as well, because they know, like, for instance, we had a couple of technical colleges there. And they know that if somebody's not in a good place mentally, they're not going to be able to succeed in education. So they're even bringing up the issues in talking about mental health and providing resources.
I wonder, too, in the networking you do with other organizations, what could be improved to help build a better safety net of support when it comes to suicide?
Yeah, again, that's a great question. And so I actually have been working with a couple organizations within my community that are trying to improve mental health for their staff. So some of the things they're looking at is ensuring that, one, they have EAP in place, but really educating the staff that it's available to them and it's available free of charge for any needs that they have, and not just work-related. They also are developing programs that are more peer-driven. Research has shown that peers are more likely to talk to each other than maybe going to management. So a lot of organizations that I work with are going to a peer-driven culture, in that they have people that you can go to, just kind of talk, share your what's going on, and the listeners are trained with what resources are available within the organization as well as within the community. And so they share that at that time.
Some people speak openly about having, you know, about battling depression or other mental health issues, but some people may refuse support when it's offered. How might you guide them in that situation?
I think just talking to the individual, sharing with them that, you know, it really is okay not to be okay. And sometimes just sharing what you yourself is going through or have gone through and what worked for you, especially if you maybe have seen a therapist and you were willing to go, that may help just to normalize that for the individual. Otherwise, sometimes it's just being persistent and keep at it and just checking in on them. Like, how are you doing? Do you think you need further support? What can I do to help you? Or I'm just going to do this for you and let's do this together. You know, I know where some resources are. So let me show you what is available.
I think what you're also saying is that there are things that we can do in our own lives to bring awareness and to help be more supported and empathetic individuals. What are some things that people can do today to bring awareness to suicide?
Yeah, I think, again, talking about it, being open about it. For instance, I have closed like t-shirts that say mental health matters, 988 is a suicide crisis text line, text and call line. So just being maybe a walking billboard, sharing whenever you can. I actually have in the past, you know, I had fingernails done that had suicide colors, or I colored my hair suicide colors, starts conversations like, oh, is that represent anything? What's it mean? And so then you can share and tell your story and let them know that mental health is important and suicide awareness and prevention and talking about it is important.
Sue, thank you so much for talking with us and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Sue Mitchell-Metz is executive coordinator of the National Alliance on Mental Health in Fond du Lac. She talked to my co-host, Kate Archer-Kent. If you or a loved one is having thoughts of suicide, you can call or text 988 to reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Again, that's three digits, 988, or text the word HOPELINE to the National Crisis Text Line at 741-741. A while back on the show, I got to talk to Wisconsin state cartographer about maps. Fun fact, I grew up as kind of a map nerd. That's what I decorated my walls with when I was a kid. Maps. Lots and lots of maps. So I wrote up a little thing for WPR.org about that chat with the cartographer. It is decorated with maps from the state cartographer's office, plus a couple of fantastical maps from my board game collection. And there's some links to the state map archive where you can find, for example, aerial photographs of your part of the state taken in the 1930s. Find it all at WPR.org. And if you like to decorate using maps, tell us about it. Email wisconsintoday@WPR.org. On Wisconsin Today, meet UW Stout's eSports team and find out the secrets to their success in national competition.
Developing a communication structure is super important because we need to just always be on the same page. And year after year, we've gotten a lot better at that.
Get in the game, coming up here on WPR News.